All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week three edition of the show, and I don't really know how else to say it, but we are in surreal times as Bucks fans right now, and not because they're in the playoffs and winning a Super Bowl. That was surreal when that happened. Not even because they're off to a fast start. That was surreal when it's happened in the past. 1997 comes to mind as the most surreal start of the season when the Bucks went 5-0 and none of us knew what to do with ourselves. This is just surreal right now because, one, it's so unexpected, and two, I'm still not sure where I am as a Bucks fan right now, and I think a lot of us are confused because of what's happening as far as, you know, the quarterback situation, which we're going to talk about on the show today and things like that, but whatever it is, whatever you want to say, the theme of today's show is going to be just to kind of live in the moment. Thomas Bassinger talked about it in his article this week. You know, there's a lot of speculation going on right now with the quarterback thing, and again, we'll get to that. There's a lot of how long can we sustain this, and we'll get to that, but I'm not thinking about that right now. For me, there's a lot of, oh my God, am I going to be on a cruise during wild card weekend? Am I going to have to get in a fight with my wife? I'm not thinking about that either. I'm just thinking about Monday Night Football, baby, right now. So we'll talk about that on the show today. We'll talk about the Eagles game on Sunday a little bit. This is the Free Stretch brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Proudly, and let me tell you, Bill Curry, Tampa's first family of Ford, is proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty now on new and pre-owned vehicles. This includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, plus 10-year roadside assistance, and one-year complimentary service. You get all that with a card, Bill Curry Ford. If you want to get more, all the details, go to BillCurryFord.com. See Sean Sullivan. He is the new general manager at Bill Curry Ford, and he will give you a Joe Bucks fan discount. Just mention the website, say Joe Bucks fan, and you'll get that discount on top of the already transparent online pricing and the new lifetime warranty. Bill Curry Ford has proudly served this community for 58 years, which is longer than most of us has been here. Not all of us. Longer than the Bucks have been around. 58 years, they're just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, and you can start shopping today right now, either there or go to the website at BillCurryFord.com. Also, Kanto Tile and Stone, if you're looking to get any tile and stone work done around your house, Kanto Tile and Stone is one of the most trustworthy and, again, long-serving companies in Tampa. Go to KantoTile.com, it's C-A-N-T-O-T-I-L-E. Tell them Bobby Fenton sent you, and you'll get fixed up. So let's set the show up here for this Week 3 edition. I am Bobby Fenton. You can get a hold of me anytime you want to. It's very simple. Email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, or get me on Twitter at BobbyGameDay. It's just BobbyGameDay. I love hearing from you. Comments, questions, cushion, discussion, all that stuff. So I'm watching the game on Sunday, and we all remember the Saints game and how great that was. And you're thinking, okay, well, that was pretty fun. It's just one game. Here we go now, game number two. This is the defending Super Bowl champions. Yes, they're without Carson Wentz, but they won the Super Bowl without Carson Wentz, so it really is truly the defending Super Bowl champions. They were missing a couple of other guys, too, but so are the Bucks. And so here we go. Let's see if they can back this up. Let's see if they can validate the Week 1 win. And then they come out again, just like gangbusters, get ahead 27-7, should have been 28-7, but we missed an extra point. And they were able to stave off the Eagles as they scored a couple of touchdowns in the second half and got things closer, and it was in 27-21 final. So anyway, here we go. We're 2-0 now. We got two wins against teams that are both supposed to be way better. Ryan Fitzpatrick is going crazy. He's the NFC Offensive Player of the Week for the second time in a row. And just everything in general, going into these first two games, if I had tried to describe what was going to happen, I literally couldn't have come up with a better scenario than what happened in the first two games as far as what actually happened. Like, I couldn't have dreamed up something that would have been any better than the actual reality of it. With a few exceptions, the defense is still, you know, they're being made to look good right now, and they've made the stops when they've had to, but just purely statistically, they still rank near the bottom of the league through two games, and there's not much of a running game to speak of, and who cares, right, when you've got your guy throwing it all over the yard like this and the receiving crew the Bucks have. But there are things that are imperfections. Overall point, though, the theme from Week 1 that I was hoping was still a real thing, that wasn't just a flash in the pan, that was truly a philosophical sea change and the way this organization approaches things, it was maintained against the Eagles. I mean, first downs were nuts. Again, they're throwing the ball. They're being aggressive. The play calling was anything but conservative. It was aggressive. It was putting the defense on its heels. It was using the weapons we have. And the most glaring example of it, and I tweeted about it at the end of the game back on Sunday, it was at the end of the game, actually. It was when the Buccaneers were on their heels a little bit. Again, they had led 27-7, but now it was 27-21, and the Bucs had the ball. There was a little bit more than 2 minutes left in the game. And, of course, with that missed extra point hanging out there, it was a little worrisome. Like, oh, man, what if we don't get a first down here? What if we give the ball back to the Eagles? What if they come down and beat us 28-27 after this day has seemed so perfect? And the Bucs had the ball. Their offense hadn't done much in the second half. And it was second and 13. They're stuck. I think it was at their own. It was near their own 20, if not inside their own 20. And the Eagles had a timeout or two left at this point. 2:45 to go. And the old Bucs, if they were even in this situation, would, without question, just have run the ball three straight times. Even on second and 13, they would have run the ball two more times. They might have made Philadelphia use a timeout or two, but ultimately would have ended up punting the football gladly, and the Eagles would have had the ball back before the two-minute warning. And you could even say that's what they should do, because, hey, make them run clock or make them use timeouts. And, you know, we don't know what would have happened. The Eagles may have driven down and beaten us against this defense. Wouldn't have been terribly surprising. But Dirk Koetter isn't doing things that way anymore. And Todd Monken's not doing things that way anymore. On second and 13, Ryan Fitzpatrick dropped back. And you're thinking, oh, I don't know, don't pass here. What if it's incomplete? Stops the clock. They don't even use a timeout. Oh, he throws a dart on a deep out to DeSean Jackson on the sideline. He catches it, toes the inbound line, stays in, and actually didn't go out of bounds at all. You know, if he had, it wouldn't have mattered. But the Bucs get a first down and just stick the knife right into the Eagles. Eagles got the ball back with, like, what was it, 10 seconds left instead of 2 minutes left, because the Bucs were aggressive and the Bucs forced their hand, forced the defense to try and make a play to stop them, and they couldn't do it. And again, that's a play that you would never have seen the old Bucs call, let alone complete. But that deep out on second and 13, just like so many other signs last week against the Saints, is what makes me say, you know what, things are different now. Now, it's not a prediction about the Bucs' record. I don't know what's going to happen this year. I'd rather be 2-0 than 0-2, and they're in good shape right now, leading the NFC South by a game. That's all great. But all I'm saying is, whatever happens, come hell or high water, this is a different Bucs team. And that mentality with the coaching staff, I mean, I've always said this, I fully believe it translates to the mentality of the team. When you've got a team that punts on 4th-and-1 from the 38, I think that sends a bad message to your guys, and I think that's a losing culture. When you get a team that throws a deep out on 2nd-and-13 with just over 2 minutes left, trying to protect the ball and the lead and just run some clock, hey, that's some stones right there. And it was really, really encouraging to see. And it worked, and the Bucs are 2-0. Now, there are so many kudos to go around so far. I mean, you look at, obviously, Fitzpatrick, who we'll get to. Bucs didn't have much of a running game to speak of this week, but Peyton Barber did a great job in blitz pickup, and there are a couple of examples on that if you went on Twitter. You know, there were some we saw on Joe's account and a few other accounts. That some really good, I mean, he did good things, even though, again, we didn't rush for a million yards. The offensive line has been outstanding. They're not getting enough credit. Ali Marpet is the second. No, excuse me, not the second. He is the highest graded guard in the NFL right now through two games. You do the Pro Football Focus, they grade everybody. He grades out number one at his position. There are five guys who have allowed zero pressures with at least 50 or more quarterback dropbacks, and Marpet is one of those. And it's not just him. I'm singling him out because he's been exceptional. But the offensive line in general has done a great job. And Ryan Fitzpatrick obviously helps make that. I mean, even under pressure, he had a better day under pressure than he did with a clean pocket on Sunday against the Eagles. And so with Fitzpatrick now, we've gotten to the point that there's been an evolution for me. And this is kind of what I wanted to get to today on the show. Because before the season started, I said, okay, I have full faith in Ryan Fitzpatrick, think he's very competent, and think we'll be okay through the first three games. That's what I said. But I also said, you know, once Jameis Winston's suspension is over, he's got 13 games that are going to determine the path that the rest of his career goes on, and those 13 games are going to be it. And that, you know, come hell or high water, win or lose, it's going to be with Jameis Winston. And I still believe that to an extent, but a couple weeks later, I came on here and said, oh, I read some stories about the Bucs saying they might just start Fitzpatrick in week four, too. You know, they have a Monday night game in week three. It's a short week. They've said they might just stay with him with a bye week the next week. And then after the bye, when Winston has some time, instead of rushing him on a short week for his first start of the year, they can do it after the week five bye. And I said, rubbish, nonsense. I don't want to hear that. I want the best players to play right now. He knows how to play. He was here all preseason. He doesn't need a week of practice. Put him in when he's eligible. Well, it looks like a moot point now anyway, because even if the Bucs played on Sunday instead of Monday and it wasn't a short week, and even if they didn't have a bye the week after, I think no matter where you come down on this whole Fitzpatrick-Winston thing, and you don't have to come down anywhere, by the way, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but wherever you come down, whether it's Fitzpatrick or Winston or nowhere at all, it's pretty hard to deny what Fitzpatrick is doing. And he might go out and not have a good game on Sunday or on Monday against the Steelers. But either way, it's hard not to imagine him starting the Week 4 game, at least, at this point. And the Buccaneers at least have an out for the Week 4 game as far as questions from the media and having to make a declaration. I mean, you know, you don't want, if you're the Bucs and if you're management, if you're Dirk Cutter, you don't want to have to say, oh, we're going with Fitzpatrick right now because we want to go with Fitzpatrick. But at least you have a cover for week four. You can say, oh, well, I know Jameis is back, but hey, like we said, the short week, we have a bye week. We're going to just kick this can down the road. Fitz is starting week four. Thanks. Bye. Okay, see ya. You know, they can just do that. They have some cover there where they don't have to make they don't have to take a stand and say, Fitzpatrick is our guy, because that's what the media is going to frame it as. They're going to say, hey, both guys can play now. Jameis is back. Who's your guy, Dirk Cutter? Who's your guy, Jason Light? And they're going to want definitive answers on that. And you can't say nothing. You say, oh, who cares what the media said? You can't, if you say nothing, you stoke a whole thing by saying nothing. And you don't want to say, oh, it's Fitz, you know? But you may not be ready to go to Jameis yet, at least in week four. So things have changed. Things have changed. And you know, when you have success like Fitzpatrick has had, I mean, I want you guys to realize, this isn't just about Fitzpatrick, but this goes with everything. It's so fleeting. I mean, life is like that, but especially pro sports and especially the NFL. So Fitzpatrick has these two games. What if I told you, not even like 15 days ago, what if I had said, hey, yeah, in 15 days, people are going to be wearing Ryan Fitzpatrick beards. He's going to have internet memes. One of these wineries is making a Fitzmagic wine. If I had told you all that stuff 15 days ago, you'd be like, what? But that's what it takes, a couple good games, and he is everybody's playboy now. Everybody loves Fitzpatrick. I mean, he's the guy. And people are so up and down and so reactionary. I mean, how many, and you've probably seen it too, if you're on Twitter or if you talk to your friends about the Bucs, or maybe you're one of these people yourself, but how many takes have you seen? Hey, I can't believe Winston's still on the team. Haven't we traded him yet? Screw him. It's Fitz's team now, babe. You know, people are just taking this and running with it because, after all, he's been really good. And he has been. I would just say be cautious. And again, the point I want to make, and Thomas Bassinger, I'm stealing this from him because he wrote it in his article, live in the moment. You don't have to take a definitive stand. You don't have to say, oh, I'm a Fitzpatrick guy, or oh, I'm a Winston guy. You don't have to do that. You don't have to be right. Like, you don't have to say it now and go on record so that in 2 months, when we know what ended up happening, you could point back and say, oh, yep, I called it. You don't have to do that. Nobody cares, first of all, whether you're right or wrong. And that even goes for me, too, even though I'm, you know, when you're on the radio or you do a podcast or whatever, I mean, you're a little more accountable because, you know, you're supposed to be somebody who knows this stuff. But even me, I mean, nobody cares if I say, oh, it should be Winston and then it's Fitzpatrick. I mean, you know, let's not inflate our own self-importance. You don't need to say, oh, I'm this or I'm that. If you want to, you can. But you also can just watch the games and have fun and root for the Bucs. You can do that. don't root for the quarterback before the team. Like, I'm sensing like factions now. And I don't think this is I'm not in the Bucks locker room, so I have no idea. I'm not going to ever be one of those guys that pretends I know what's happening in the locker room. But just amongst the fans I'm talking about, I'm sensing factions. Like, oh, here's the Fitz crew. Screw Jameis. I hope we never even see him again. Could care less if he even exists. And then there's the Winston people. Oh, well, you know, he'd be doing this too if he was in. Just wait till he gets back. It's going to be even better. You know, that's all well and good. But I just want the Bucks to win. Like, above all, I want the Bucks to win. And I, obviously, if you're talking about just their personalities off the field, yeah, sure, Fitzpatrick's more likable. He doesn't have a record of anything untoward. But at the same time, just strictly talking football, I like whoever's in there whizzing it all around the yard. It's been Fitzpatrick the past 2 weeks, and I hope it continues to be him this week and, you know, however long it is. But when Jameis is back and he's in there, I think it'll be him, too. I mean, I've been talking about Jameis Winston on the field, strictly as a quarterback, for months, going back to the offseason. I think it's going to be a big year for him. He looked great in the preseason. That didn't do anything to discourage me. And now when he gets back, I think he'll be really good. And I still think he's the guy long term. I think people who are saying, oh, hey, Jameis, who? I think those people are being a little bit naive, either willfully or not, but I think they're being naive. I still think this team will go as far as Jameis eventually takes them. But in the moment right now, I'm not thinking about that because Fitzpatrick's doing his thing, and that's fine. And I don't feel sorry for Jameis Winston, not one iota either, by the way. And Tom Jones wrote a good article today, if you go to the Tampa Bay Times or go on the website, about Jameis and basically saying, you know what, if he hadn't acted like a child, if he hadn't been belligerent, if he hadn't been irresponsible, if he hadn't gotten drunk and done all the crap he did on that night of the Uber drive, then he would have been the one starting off these first two games. He'd be the one getting ready for a game on Monday night against the Steelers, and Ryan Fitzpatrick would just be some backup that a few of us, you know, here in Tampa know about, but wouldn't be that big of a story around the league. He'd be just another guy. He'd be a jag, just another guy. So that's on Jameis, and that's fine. Hey, you put yourself at risk, you put your team at risk, and now another guy comes in and succeeds, and you got to sit there and, you know, you got to take it. And again, no sympathy for him. But, you know, with the news this week, it makes it look even worse, although it isn't actually, doesn't affect anything. But, you know, if you didn't hear, Jameis' accuser has come out and, you know, she's going for the civil suit. She's going for the cash. Not surprising. And it's her right to do that through the legal system. I mean, I'm not going to say anything one way or the other about her. She can do whatever she wants. And he did do what he did. I think we all pretty much know that right now. So then the whole story gets dredged back up. Even though, again, nothing new has happened and it's nothing in the report about the civil suit is anything we didn't already know, it still churns up all these feelings once again. And we got to deal with this now. But we don't have to, is my point. Because you can just be a fan and be excited about Monday night and turn the game on. I got a text from my buddy Mike, who always comes up with these great hypotheticals. He works in accounting, but he could probably be a talk show host just because he comes up with these great, you know, really makes you think type things. And he'll just floor me with them sometimes out of nowhere. So I got a text from him the other day. It just says, hey, Bobby, if you woke up tomorrow and your phone was blowing up, there was alerts, Twitter was going crazy, and you just woke up and grabbed your phone and it said the Bucks have traded Jameis to Arizona for the first rounder next year and the first rounder in 2020. Two first rounders. The Bucks just sent him to Arizona. You just saw it on your phone. How do you feel? He asked me. And I was like, whoa, like, I got to think about that. Hey, you know, I wouldn't feel good about it. I mean, I'll say it this way, and I love Fitzpatrick. If I heard they traded Fitzpatrick for two first rounders, I'd be really happy then. But no, I wouldn't trade Jameis for anything right now. I really wouldn't. I still think he's the team's quarterback of the future. So there's a lot of people, I bet, that if that hypothetical happened to them, again, you wake up in the morning, your phone's got 25 alerts, Twitter's going crazy, you've got 16 text messages from friends. Hey, did you see what happened? The Bucks traded Jameis to Arizona. They got two first-rounders back. How would you feel? I could do a poll on my Twitter feed, maybe. Or maybe the Joes could, because they got way more followers than me. But that'd be interesting. But no, I wouldn't want that. I mean, I really wouldn't. It's a great hypothetical. It's a fun thing to talk about. But if that happened, I'd be like, no. First of all, I wouldn't believe it. I'd be checking like blue check marks and making sure it wasn't some fake tweet or something like that. But you just have to remember how quickly the moment can change. Bucks go out Monday night against the Steelers. They could have a terrible game offensively. Turnovers galore, blah, blah, blah. Lose something like 27 to 10 or something like that. And, you know, it's back to reality. I mean, they say it's a cliche, but you're only as good as your last game. But, man, that really is true, especially in these situations. So, we do know this. What Fitzpatrick and the Bucs offense has done the first two games, I think their success is sustainable as far as being able to win games with firepower. The specifics of what they've done is not sustainable. Fitzpatrick's not going to throw four touchdowns a game. He's not going to throw 400 yards a game. He's not going to throw all these touchdowns and somehow miraculously keep the turnovers so low. And make no mistake, turnovers are a big part of what the Bucs have been able to do. I mean, against the Saints, for as crazy an offensive display as that was, they probably don't win without that scoop and score by Justin Evans. And then, you know, you look at the actual defense, and they're not ranking very highly in as far as what they've done. And I don't just mean the generic statistics on NFL.com. Like DVOA from Football Outsiders has the Bucs defense ranked in the like 30 or 31, something like that. The Bucs as a whole, as a team, are still ranked 15 despite being 2-0 because their defense is bringing their overall team ranking down. But what's been the difference is turnovers, turnover ratio. The Buccaneers are ahead in that, and that's everything. I mean, you do that, you're going to be okay. And the defense has come up with some big turnovers. Fumble luck is another one, which fumble luck is a very true phrase. Like, forcing fumbles may not be luck, but who recovers fumbles is almost purely luck. And there have been four fumbles the Bucs have forced, and they've recovered all four of them. And, you know, sometimes it's two and two or whatever. So the Bucs have had a lot of things go their way in these first two games, and they don't have to make any apologies for that because there's been plenty of times when it goes the other way. And people say you make your own luck. Well, forcing four fumbles is a good thing. I mean, even if you've recovered all four of them, you can't do that without forcing four fumbles. So there's a lot of things that may even out as we go on here. And I'm not penciling the Bucs in for 14-2 just because of how they looked. But we're here at Monday night now. It's the Monday night game. It's week three against the Steelers. When you look at the Bucs' schedule, when it came out before the season started, it's fairly ho-hum. I mean, as far as the layout of it, a bunch of Sunday at 1 o'clock games, the teams they play, it's a tough schedule, but nothing crazy. But these two early games against the Steelers and the Eagles kind of stood out because of, obviously, the marquee value of the teams. But in addition to that, the Steelers game is on Monday Night Football. I mean, right out of the gate. And Monday Night Football, let me tell you something about this week, folks. These games are always near and dear to my heart. As a longtime Bucs fan, other longtime Bucs fans may know what I'm talking about here. But as a longtime Bucs fan, I kind of fetishized Monday Night Football as a kid growing up. Because in the 80s and all through the 90s, the Bucs never played on it. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Like, oh man, Monday Night Football. And never experiencing it for my own team caused me to put Monday Night Football on this sort of pedestal that to this day, even though it's not what it used to be, and kind of Sunday Night Football has kind of surpassed it as far as the premier game, but still, Monday Night Football is special. And, you know, again, the Bucs had double-digit losses the whole time in the 80s, most of the 90s, and then 1997, that season came along, which I mentioned earlier. Bucs started out 5-0, ended up going 10-6, making the playoffs, winning a playoff game. All that was new to me. And then, of course, they ended up losing to Green Bay in the divisional round at Lambeau. But that 1997 season, just because of all the first time I'd experienced a winning team, the first time I'd experienced a playoff game, the first time I'd experienced my team like being one of the teams people talked about. You know what else was the first time I experienced? In the spring of 98 when the schedule came out, I remember how excited I was thinking, oh man, like, they got to be on Monday night, right? Like, they were a playoff team. I was like, I'm pretty sure, like, me and my friends all talked about it. I'm pretty sure they're going to be, hey, maybe two times, maybe three times. Like, Monday night's going to be a thing now. And so, lo and behold, spring of 98, the schedule comes out. Bucks Packers, I think it was December 7th, if I'm not mistaken. It was the first week of December, Monday Night Football, Raymond James Stadium. And even back in April, and remember, this is before the internet came out, so I think I found out about it in the paper the next day when the schedule came out. From that day on, like, as much as I was looking forward to the whole 98 season, I mean, you have no idea how obsessed I was with this Monday night game. Like, it was like the crowning jewel of the entire season. I could not wait for the Bucks-Packers on Monday night. And it's funny because in 1998, I was a freshman, and I graduated from the University of Florida proudly. But in 1998, I was a freshman at the University of South Florida here in Tampa. When I was at Jesuit High School in the mid to late 90s, anyway, my mom was always real big on academics, and I was always real big on doing just enough to get by. So my mom told me, she's like, you know, if you do your job and have a high GPA, whatever it is, 3 point something, you know, I have to get a 4.0 or anything, you know, 3.5, whatever she wanted, I can't remember. So if you do your job and fulfill your responsibilities, you can pick your college. But if you don't, I don't care where you get in, she said, you're going to USF for the first year until you straighten out your deal. So naturally, of course, I did just enough to get by. And I didn't fail anything, but I mean, I just had like a, I think I had like a 2.9 or something in my GPA. I was not a great student. Again, just did enough to get through my stuff and advance to the next round, whether it was the next year of high school or eventually college. And I actually did get in to the colleges I applied to. I had decent test scores, but my mom said, no, you're going to USF for your freshman year. So fine, the reason I'm telling you all this is because in the fall of 1998, and this is where Monday Night Football is for me on the totem pole, in the fall of 1998, I was at USF, and I took this one class. It was, I think it was whatever your first year math class is in college. I can't, was it calculus or something? I don't remember. I think it was calculus. And I took an evening class. It was like a class from 6:30 to 8:30 on Monday evenings. So lo and behold, the first Monday night game of my, let's say, aware lifetime. They had a Monday night game when I was like 2. But the first Monday night game of my sentient lifetime where I actually knew what the hell was going on. Final exam night for this calculus class in college. 6:30 p.m. Monday night football kicked off at 8:30 p.m. So I don't know if you guys remember this, those of you that went to college or even high school, if you had teachers who gave you the breakdown of what all the grades counted for, but this class, he told you, like, your first test is worth 20%, your second test is worth 20%, your quizzes and homework will be worth 10%, and then your final exam is worth 40% or whatever, you know, a bunch of different things added up. But what you could do going into the final exam is use that formula, and you could calculate exactly what grade you needed on the final exam to get each letter grade. So you might say, okay, to get an A in this class, I'm going to need, you know, a 91 on the final exam. To get a B in this class, I'm going to need a 71, and I clinch a B. And to get a C plus in this class, I need like a 51, and then I clinch a C. And it was just straight numbers for me. Like, I didn't care what my actual grade on the final exam was. I just cared about what I needed to get each letter grade. So it was one of those type of things where to get a C in this class, I needed like a 51 or something like that. And if I wanted to get a B, it was a little, I needed like a 71 or an 81. I can't remember what it was. And to get an A, it was higher than that. So what do you think I did with Monday Night Football on tap when I got to take that final exam at 6:30, just 2 hours from kickoff? I sat down, I cracked my knuckles. I come into class wearing my Buccaneer polo shirt, like I'm ready to go to the game. I could care less about this class. So what I do is I get in there. I go through and I take care of the problems I know how to take care of, like right off the bat. Like, let's get the ones we know. I'm doing the math in my head. I think I got enough for a 51 here. That's a C plus. I could sit here for another hour or something like that and really gut this out and maybe scrap and claw and get my B. Or I could get the hell out of here and go to the game right now. So I don't even need to finish the story. You obviously know where this is going. I breezed through. I mean, I don't even remember what answers I put for some of the other problems. But I got my whatever it was that I needed, and I got the hell out of there. And I hightailed it down Interstate 275. And I got to Raymond James Stadium just before kickoff for that Monday night game. And oh man, was I rewarded. That was the game where the Bucks sacked Brett Favre, like, I think it was 7 times. Like, Sapp was an animal that night. The Bucks only finished the 98 season 8-8, but at the time, that was a really big game in December, making the playoff push. We all thought the Bucks were going to build off of what happened in 97 and go even further. But 98, they didn't. They actually had a random 8-8 season, missed the playoffs, and it was 99 when they made the leap and got to the NFC Championship game. So, Monday Night Football, I mean, it's an institution. It's special. It's the one game everyone's watching. The whole country's eyes are on your team. I remember the 2000 Monday night game with Sean King making the lateral to Warwick Dunn. It was Warwick Dunn making the lateral to Sean King in that crazy comeback. Still the most exciting game I've ever seen in person at Raymond James Stadium. And it was right before Christmas, the 2000 Monday night game. I remember how geeked up we were coming off the 1999 NFC Championship game loss. And me and my buddies actually I'd saved the newspaper from 1999 when the Bucks lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And I had, for whatever reason, because at 19 I did stuff like this, I saved the front page as a souvenir with the big picture of Ricky Prohl making the catch over his shoulder, Brian Kelly reaching up futilely to try and stop him. And so when the game came in December of 2000, I had like this old beat-up Pontiac Grand Am, and we actually, to the back windshield of the car, we got duct tape, and I taped the front page of the losing NFC Championship, front page from the 99 NFC Championship, and then I drew a big sign that said "Never Forget," and I duct taped that to my back windshield too. I couldn't even see out of the car, and that's what we drove to the stadium in. And people are honking their horns like we were geeked up for revenge, and then the Bucks had that incredible win. And, stuff like that, again, that I probably wouldn't have done for a Sunday at 1 o'clock game or even a Sunday at 4 o'clock game. But there's something about those lights, man. And if you're trying to go on Monday night, I read earlier the game is still not sold out yet. It's close. I mean, there's, it's not going to be empty. But if you want to buy tickets, I think the cheapest ones left are in the 90s or more. Or you can always go outside and buy some. And I did this for the Patriots game last year. Just go to the game, go to the stadium, look around. If you don't get a price you want to pay, there's going to be people with tents set up, tailgates, and who have TVs set up outside. I went to the Patriots game last year, the Thursday night game with my wife, and we had a blast. It was beautiful weather. I said, listen, I'll go for $50. I'm not going to spend $100 or whatever. If we don't like what we see, we can get in our car and go home. I mean, I live, 10 minutes from Raymond James Stadium. It's not that hard. Let's just go check it out. So we ended up not wanting to spend $100, and that's what people were asking. And we ended up finding this tailgate party, people we didn't even know, but they had a huge TV set up. They had all kinds of barbecue and everything. And we actually stayed there for about half the game, just talking with them. I like talking to fellow Bucks fans. And, the Bucks ended up losing that game, but they played halfway decent, going toe-to-toe with Brady and the Patriots. And it just felt good. It was fun to be out there. Do that this Monday night. The weather will be nice. It'll be the evening. It won't be so hot. And have a great time with it. Because after this, unless we get flexed into 6 consecutive Sunday night games later in the season, which is possible with the way the team's playing. But after this, it's Sunday at 1 from here on in. So savor it. Or like I always tell you, use it as an excuse to get in touch with your friends and have some fun. Because this is all supposed to be fun. This is all supposed to be about camaraderie. And so it's Monday night. It could just be a normal ho-hum work week night. But not this one. Call up your buddy. Say, hey, come over. Let's watch the game. Or I'll go over to your house. Or we'll go out to a sports bar or whatever. Doing stuff in the middle of the week always makes it feel like a Saturday night, even if it's not. So give yourself some fun. And we'll see what happens with that. Of course, the Steelers come in here. Antonio Brown, he's been in the news a little bit. Been some dissatisfaction. And he wasn't around the facility the first couple days of the week. As of yesterday, and I'm recording this show on Thursday, but as of yesterday, he was in the building, game planning for the Bucs. Don't think we're going to get away with one there, and he's not going to play. He'll be there. I don't love the Steelers coming into the game winless. They got the tie against Cleveland. They lost to the Chiefs. They're 0-1-1. I think they were the first team this week to score a certain amount of points and not have turnover. I should have looked up the stat before I started the show. I'll tweet it out if I find it after. But they lost a game under circumstances last week that I don't think any team in the NFL has ever lost a game, as far as like having a positive turnover ratio plus scoring 40-something points. Teams are like 800,000-0 in NFL history doing that until Sunday when the Chiefs beat them. So I don't love them coming in at 0-1-1. I'd rather they already have a win. I do love them giving up a million points to the Chiefs And Patrick Mahomes, he looks unbelievable. So we'll keep an eye on them. But for this week, hey, I'll take another shootout. It's been fun. And shootouts are the norm right now. I mean, if you look at this past week, and this was another stat I got from Thomas Bassinger's article, but if you look at this past week, it was noted as the most passer-friendly week in the history of the NFL. That's an actual, I mean, I didn't make that up. If you look at the quarterback rating numbers, here, I'm pulling it up right now. The average quarterback rating for the whole week, this is everybody, was over 100, which I mean, the second most highest rated quarterback week was like week 8 of the 2010 season, and it was like 94. And so things are changing in the NFL. I mean, rules continue to be made to favor the offense. You saw what happened with the Clay Matthews hit with Green Bay and Minnesota. And let me tell you something about this new rule thing that we all were afraid of when the season started. It actually hasn't been that bad in terms of total flags. If you look at total flags, through 2 weeks, there have only been two of the lowering the helmet penalties. Now, the Clay Matthews penalty was not one of those, technically. But, you know, people said, oh my God, how are they going to do this new rule? Guys lower their heads every time. It looks like they're not calling the letter of the law, but they're calling the spirit of the law. And I'm a big spirit of the law, not letter of the law guy, especially when it comes to subjective stuff. I mean, a foot's either inbounds or out of bounds. A ball either hits the ground or not. But for something like this, that's more subjective. They're not calling literally every time someone has lowered their head yet. If they were, there would have been more than two penalties. They have called it twice. Now, the Clay Matthews play, the NFL's doubled down on it and said, oh, nope, that's exactly what, that should be a call. In fact, we're going to use it in our videos to show you what should be a call. And that was garbage. I mean, the Packers were about to win that game. They got the stop. They needed that horrible call. And it's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. Go on Twitter and search it if you haven't seen it. I mean, Matthews doesn't use his head, doesn't land with his weight on the quarterback, literally puts his left arm out to try and brace his landing on purpose to absorb some of the weight. Literally everything the ball was already out, the ball wasn't out like until right when he got there. It wasn't like the ball was already out 2 seconds before. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. And instead, they overrule the Packers getting the stop. The Vikings keep the ball. Ends up being a tie. And that's a whole other thing I'm pissed off about is these ties now because of these short overtimes. But anyway, point is, a game outcome has changed because of the new rules. Or the interpretation of the rules being new or whatever. So that's one. It was a tie that should have been a win for Green Bay. We'll see if it matters at the end of the year. But as someone who, I mean, I like offense and I want to see offense. And, you know, the NFL knows fans want that and that's great. What bothers me the most, though, even when I get offense, is when it's at the expense of fairness. And I don't like when things feel like pro wrestling or an outcome feels like it was manipulated. And I'm not saying the referee tried to manipulate the outcome, but when you make a call like that, that's what it does. I had a big problem with that. But as far as the lowering the head stuff, it hasn't been that big of a problem. We'll keep an eye on it. In the meantime, again, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. I always love hearing from you. Twitter @BobbyGameDay. And the main takeaway, again, folks, I'll say it one more time. Live in the moment. Just watch the game Monday. Have fun with it. It's so true. Like, don't think, oh, man, I don't know if, I mean, I used to be a Jameis guy, but do I need to side with Fitzpatrick now? You don't have to side with anybody. Or if you're a Fitzpatrick guy, you don't think, oh, man, I need to really be vocal this week with my buddies and on Twitter, and I need to let people know that I think Jameis Winston shouldn't be here. And maybe you think that, and that's fine. But, I mean, you don't have to go on record for anything. No one's going to come back in a month and say, oh, hey, the Bucs are winning, but you thought it was going to be Jameis, and it's Fitz. I'll bet you feel crunchy right now. Nobody cares. If you're listening to this show, if you're on this website, joebucksfan.com, this fantastic website that covers the Bucs from top to bottom, literally 365 days a year, and you're taking the time to listen to me, or you're taking the time to listen to the Joes, or Ira with Derek, or Bucs Uncensored with Justin, you're taking the time to do that. You're a Bucs fan like me. However long it's been, whether you go back to the old days like I do, or whether you are relatively new, it doesn't matter, okay? Just love the Bucs. Just love them. Just love them. Don't worry about anything else. Don't worry about, oh, what do the Bucs do in week 5? Who plays quarterback? They'll figure it out. it's a better problem trying to figure out which good quarterback you should start than which quarterback you could start at all because everybody's so bad. The Bucs are fine. Like, they're in a good position. There's a little bit of a controversy, of course. Although I prefer the word dilemma to controversy. But yeah, there's a little bit of that, and that's fine. Because we're talking about good, not bad. And in my experience over the years, not just in sports, but in life with things like this, when you're stressing over an upcoming decision, I found that the stress is often unwarranted and that by the time it comes to make a decision, it's usually more obvious what you should do than it seemed like it would be when you were worrying about it. So just let it flow, folks. It's Monday Night Football. There is no dilemma on Monday. Ryan Fitzpatrick will start again and we'll try to light it up again. And until then, enjoy the rest of Sunday's games. I can't even imagine that we'd be talking about a 3-0 team. I couldn't have at least 2 weeks ago, but it's in play now. And I don't even want to hear the words 3. I shouldn't have even said it. I don't want to hear the words 3-0. Just beat Pittsburgh. That's it. And the Bucs can do that. And have fun. Like I said, if you're thinking about going to the game, drive out there. If you're thinking about calling buddies up and watching it at home, do that. Or go to a sports bar or whatever. Just make it a fun, positive experience because that's what Buck football is supposed to be and that's what it hasn't been for so long and that's what it feels like it can be now. So until then, I want to thank Bill Curry Ford and Canto Tile, our show sponsors, for taking care of us. I want to thank the Joes for putting me in front of you guys and giving me the chance to have all you guys listen to this podcast. It's an honor as always. Thanks to all your emails. I hear from you guys all the time. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Keep them coming. I want to talk to you. And thanks to the Bucs for starting off 2-0 and getting everybody excited. That's the most thankful thing I guess we have right now. So until next week, have a great weekend. Stay safe. Monday night especially, you know. Do your thing, but have a good time and have fun with it and be safe. And I will talk to you on the other side. But wherever you are until then, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and go Bucks.